Welcome to another fun and exciting episode of The Rogues in the House, a podcast dedicated to the love of all things sword and sorcery, delivered with 100% enthusiasm from self-proclaimed experts. So hide your women, because the rogues are in the house. Hey, Matt, it's been a while since we've talked.
Hey, Dean, very regressive intro you've got there. Transgressive, I don't know. I'm not sure about that one. But okay. You need to hide your women because, yes, rogues are about.
That's right.
The men as well need to be hidden if you're not ready to tangle with some rogues. This is the only
just
podcast.
Hide. Just hide in general.
Yeah, exactly. This is the only podcast I'm aware of that uses a title for a Conan story as the title of the podcast. That makes us extra hardcore. It makes us on brand. And tonight, I am excited because we are joined by one particular gentleman who should have been on this show for a long time. He was in our own published volume one of A Book of Blades, which you should pick up and review on Amazon because we like that. It is Mr. John C. Hawking. And I mean, John has been a guy whose work we've admired for a while. I'm going to let him say hello in a second. But first, I want to introduce the second part of this package. We have also with us Chris Butera, and he is the current prose editor at Heroic Signatures. There was a very exciting announcement recently involving basically a wave of pastiche that's going to come out on a monthly basis over the next year for Robert E. Howard's various characters. And of course, that works well for this podcast. John, thank you for joining us. Chime in so we can hear your voice.
I hope you can hear me. I'm delighted to be here. I followed the Rogues podcast for some time. It's always a delight to listen to, and it's delightful to be here. If I'm known for anything, I'm known for writing Conan Pastiche, Conan the Emerald Lotus, which appeared low these many years ago, and is likely to be reprinted along with the oft-promised but never seen sequel, Conan the Living Plague. I think we'll see that come November. Nope, we're not going to see it come November. We're going to see it next summer. We're going to see it in June, right? Because it got pushed back.
That's right. There was a pushback. I actually talked to Marcos Cronander while we were at Gen Con. He explained that to me, and I just kind of got the info I can share is that, yeah, it's still coming, and that's awesome. Because, frankly, John, or Mr. Hawking, it is one of the most oft-repeated best pastiche that we've ever had for Conan. I would agree that as far as the, you know, those old, I think they were all Tor novels. You know, mm-hmm. I've read probably 10 or more of those, and it was absolutely the best one. And we can geek out about that in a little bit. Next up, I got to introduce Chris here. I mean, I already did, but I guess say hi, Chris. Tell us what's up.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. Your podcast is spoken with great air in the hallowed halls of Heroic Signature. So it is my distinct pleasure to be here. You probably don't know my name now, but hopefully you look on it with some kindness in the years to come. I'm hoping that I can help usher along, be a good steward of Conan and Robert E. Howard.
Now, is your nickname Henry Cavill's little brother? Because that's what I said when he first popped on this mic. You should see this guy. He looks like he could be a sibling of Henry Cavill, a man who has many.
Please tell that to all my coworkers. I would love that nickname. You can't, just like a sword, you can't buy your own sword. You can't bestow your own nickname to someone.
That is true. But I will also say this, and I say this with some matter of pride and just absolute truth. Over the years, I don't know, I'm famous for, oh, I'm not famous at all, but among the people who know me.
famous in his own mind.
Yeah, exactly. I'm famous for my Arnold Schwarzenegger impression, but also, and I don't even know if I'm famous for this, and it might just be something that I know about myself, is that I have given nicknames to probably 30, 40, 50 people over the years. They have all stuck. So you're Henry Cavill now, Chris, and that will stick.
I will take it 100%.
I want to debate the nickname you gave me. You call me Leather Hat Man, and I don't think that one's sticking very well.
No, hold on. It's old Leather Cap.
Leather Cap. That's
old
right.
Old Leather Cap. It'll stick. I just haven't hurled it enough.
You just got to wear a cap, apparently.
Well, I do, apparently, enough for Matt to call me Leather Cap because I have a leather baseball cap that I wear quite often.
Yeah, you're underselling the importance of your cap, man. It's like you told me that is your old faithful.
It is. It is my old faithful. I've had it for decades.
Your old leather cap. I love it.
Leather cap.
I'll work on it. That. And yeah, and he's his other nickname from Logan and I is Captain America. So Leather Captain America. Come on, what are we doing?
Perfect.
<That's good.
laughs> It all works.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, dudes, let's jump right into this. We will skip the bazaar of the bazaar because we don't know how down for tripping in the bazaar you guys are. So we're going to move past it. And in the interest of keeping this episode lean and mean, we're going to get right to the stuff. So because both of you are new to this show, I really must ask you this question. It's a question I ask most of our new guests when I think about it. Is we'll start with Chris and then we'll move to John. Chris, what was your first brush with Conan and or Howard's characters? Now, before you answer, I want you to know that this is not some stuffy podcast where you have to give me some answer like, well, of course, the first time was when I pored over my pages of my uncle's copy of Weird Tales. If it was Conan the Adventurer, the cartoon, that can be an answer. You just tell us straight.
It was Tower of the Elephant. When I was a kid, I was a big reader, big into science fiction and fantasy, and I had an uncle who was huge into Conan, and he gave me a science fiction and fantasy, an anthology, and it had Tower of the Elephant in it, and I loved it, and I told my parents that I wanted to read more, but my father, he is a big reader, he wrote his dissertation on James Joyce. And he did not see Robert E. Howard as the pinnacle of writing at the time. So he kind of steered me slightly away from it. So I got a taste of Howard. But then I went from there. I went on to King Arthur. I went into more high fantasy. And I didn't come back around to Conan until a bit later.
I love that James Joyce was the one that was the highbrow, right? And it always seems to be for so many people. I remember in university, like, go to read James Joyce.
I won't give you my opinion on James Joyce, but let's just say my father has given me many, many copies of his books over the years, and they may have a little bit of dust on them.
Yeah. I bounced off those a little, and that's okay. It's like, it doesn't mean I thought they were crap. It's that I bounced off slightly. Yeah.
To each their own. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Awesome. Tower of the Elephant. And I mean, what a place to start. Especially where you say you were into like, sci-fi as well, and that's that weird story that kind of has those two things going for it.
Absolutely. Awesome. One thing I love about Howard too is there's some stories where you can just feel his confidence coming off the page. I would say Tower is one, Beyond Black River is another one where you can just like sort of feel like he's in the groove, and Tower is just a perfect way to just slip in to Howard, I think.
Yeah, I've seen that bandied about that it is a lot of people suggest it be the first to introduce someone to it because it really does have all the hits, and it doesn't have, you know, some of the other stuff that might turn people off too, right? Yeah. Great starting point. Mr. Hawking, I feel like I have no idea what your starting point was, and I can't wait to hear it.
I'm guessing his was very similar to mine.
Are you two men of the same generation?
We got to go way back, guys, like to the late Cretaceous period. I was just a kid.
Give yourself some credit.
It was a long time ago. I was a precocious reader. I was a little kid, and my dad brought home a copy of The Lancer, Conan the Adventurer. That's the one with the classic Rosetta cover with Conan on the cover, you know, just driving a sword down on top of a pile of bodies, woman clinging to his legs, giant skull in the background. My dad, an art teacher, thought that picture was great and talked to me about it for some time before passing me the book. The first story in there is People of the Black Circle, which blew my little mind. It was far more intense than anything I'd read. As a kid reading science fiction and genre stuff at an early age, I basically read classics. I was reading Jules Verne, H.G. Wells, and some Edgar Rice Burroughs. And Howard's, especially the horror elements of that particular story just reached up and grabbed me by the throat. I'd never read, obviously, I was a little guy, I didn't know. But it had a powerful effect on me that I think it stuck with me pretty much throughout the rest of my life. Mm. Strong stuff.
Yeah, I love when people bring in the horror element to their sort of their origin story with Sword and Sorcery. I mean, it's kind of, I'm a broken record at this point in saying that's a big draw for me, but the stuff in People the Black Circle is just weird, dangerous, foul magic.
Yeah, it's clearly the sorcery in it is, you know, it's strong horror elements. You know, I think I'll take your heart, Kerem Shah, he says, and then wrenches the guy's heart out of his chest from across the room. So I hadn't read anything like that before. And even now, that's some powerful stuff. You got a pretty strong supporting character that just gets taken out with the snap of a fingers by a really obnoxious, gloating sort of an evil. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a rad story. And that's one I need to reread. It's been years.
Yeah, it stands up.
Okay, guys. Yeah. Thank you for sharing your Sword and Sorcery / Howard origin story. Okay, Chris, this is a question. I actually saw it posted as early as today in the Comic Book Art of Conan the Barbarian Facebook group, to which I said, hey, man, I'll get a response for this. So what is the relationship between Titans Conan publishing efforts and what you folks are doing at Heroic Signatures? We'll start with that. It's kind of a two-part question. How does that work?
So the way it is now, so when it comes to the comics and us, it is more of a co-publishing deal where we have a mad genius that we keep tucked away, Matt Murray, and he speaks with Jim Zub. He goes out, he does a lot of the creative, he puts it all together. He gathers the artists and he does that. Whereas it is for the books, as of right now, it's more of a licensing deal. But we are very closely aligned with them. So our publishing efforts are basically one and the same. They'll always be sending me over copies of the stories just to make sure that they're aligned with the character. And so that's more of a typical license. But these 12 short stories that we have publishing out now, the Heroic Legends series, these were under the guide of this guy named Steve Saffel, who's the editor over at Titan. This was his baby. He's actually heading toward retirement now. This is sort of his last hurrah. So he really put these together with a master's hand. I mean, this man knows exactly what he's doing. And I've been very lucky that I have come in while this is sort of winding down. I can kind of just sit back and see his genius at work. And then from here, it's still sort of up in the air how this is going to go forward, but it seems now that Heroic is going to be taking more of the creative side again, just like we do with the comics. And that will be under my purview, which is very exciting. Yeah.
As Sean Connery once said, you're the man now, dog. No one knows that quote. Speaking of nicknames, I got to throw this in there because you brought up Matt Murray. Papa Smurf. That's who Matt Murray
is. Smurf. Yep. Yeah.
Oh my
Absolutely.
Gosh. Yes.
Right. He's got the Smurf legacy. I mean, we've had him on the show, but there's a Papa energy to Matt Murray that yes. I think. Now, Steve, I met briefly when we went to Conan camp there a couple of years ago at Howard Days. And I nerded out with him slightly because I was like, holy crap. So you're like the guy who's doing the editing for the Conan work and the stuff on Alien and Aliens, which, I mean, come on, those are my two big ones. So, yeah. And we wish Mr. Saffel a fine retirement when he finally steps away. So.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. I had a second part to that question, didn't I? Now, this may not be something you can answer at the moment, but will any of the releases under the Heroic Legend series, will they share any sort of continuity with what Titan was putting out with the novels, like with the Werner novel?
Sterling novel.
Sterling.
You get that wrong all the time.
I do. I know. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. Like, I mean, obviously they're sharing the Howard connection, but do any of those have any overlap? Odd question. Mostly just my own curiosity.
When we look at continuity, we really look more at continuity when it comes to the character, right? Bring up Matt Murray again. He has a really great analogy of how we look at Howard and Howard Tales and whatnot. And he sees all the Conan stories, all the tales, his rich history over the past 90 years, as tales being told around the campfire, that the story shifts and change and grow in the telling with the different tale tellers. But at the heart of it all, the truest interpretation of the stories is Howard, is the man himself. So everybody that comes afterwards, they're all, it's like a big, long game of telephone, right? Whether or not there's continuity to the source material. So you saw it like with Blood of the Serpent, it's sort of served as a prequel to Red Nails. Mm-hmm. Again, it's like an interpretation of someone else's tale. Like this may be true to this teller in this way and shape and form. I don't like to bandy the word canon around quite a bit, but it's something that we take very seriously, but it always comes back to the characters. It always comes back to Conan or Solomon Kane, whoever we're dealing with at the time.
Yeah, I think that's smart too, right? Figuring out the essence of the character, what worked. And also, yeah, I like that a lot with the idea of the campfire thing, because, you know, we all come to this character from different ways. Maybe it's Roy Thomas comics. Maybe it's maybe you played Conan Exiles once. Maybe it's you grew up on the 1982 film. And with the work I do on the RPG and the board game, I like to think in the same way. I want to reconcile all these parts of Conan that I like but might conflict. And right. If you kind of have that weird oral history about it, right, or that there was – these are sketchy stories that were passed down. We don't necessarily know. I mean, it just opens up the fun box in my opinion. Yeah. John, you got something to say about that? Maybe not.
I just think that's I think that's a fine way to actually conduct business. You got to let the authors have a little bit of freedom, and the sort of, I don't know, there's been a kind of strong focus on the Conan chronology, which was unwieldy from the very beginning and much less now, or anyone who dares try to, you know, form a solid canonical chronology out of all the bits and pieces that have been written in comic book and pastiche and such. It's kind of out of luck. I appreciate the, you know, Howard's work is canon and everything else. You got to kind of give the authors a little room to flex. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you could take Conan completely out of the Hyborian age or tell stories that didn't really seem to fit with the model, and you want to avoid that, but you don't want a real straitjacket out of trying to make everything fit precisely, because that's just not going to do. It's not a creative way to proceed. So that sounds good to me.
Yeah, I think too that, like, obviously there's certain, you know, that word canon, there's certain things we don't want to contradict. But at the same time, a creator, you kind of want the freedom to express. And I guess I wouldn't want to be terribly focused on, oh my God, this has to be absolutely right. I can't contradict the thing. It's like a certain magic might be taken away from that, you know?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And I mean, to be fair, like, not to sort of poo on what has come before, like a lot of those Torah pastiches were just, they were fast and loose, man. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
But it's all we had.
Yeah. And John's was the best.
Well, I don't know. It's uncool to come out and say as much, but
of course,
you know, that's one of the main reasons I wrote that. And I wrote Emerald Lotus to please myself, was that I felt like the Conan pastiches weren't quite being what I wanted them to be. I thought I'll try to write one that will have the stuff in it that I want to read. And there you have it. That's either it works or it doesn't for you.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, it was great. I blasted through that book really quickly. And I mean, it's a testament to, I think, to its popularity that it's the one of the more difficult ones to find.
The last time it was printed was like, what, 1999?
So, yeah, but like, yeah. When was the last time I can still find Carl Edward Wagner's Conan pastiche pretty easily, man? And that's a name.
It's been through more printing than mine, though, that's for sure. And, you know, yeah.
Whatever. You know.
Thanks. I certainly appreciate it. There's actually been a little bit of a backlash against Lotus. I think about people who worked hard to find a copy or spent out the nose for it, the poor devils.
Oh, I see.
Would read it and go, well, what's the big deal? I mean, it's just a pastiche. And yeah, it's not like you're reading Tower of the Elephant for the first time, guys. It's just a pastiche done with some passion, but it's just a pastiche.
I mean, the passion is all right. And one of the things that when you and I spoke, John, one of the things that really came out is your love and your passion for this character and this world. And that is absolutely something that comes out on the page. So it's not just a pastiche, it's something that's done with supreme adoration, which really puts it in sort of a higher echelon, in my perspective.
Yeah.
Thanks. No, I get that. Like, yeah, it's a joy to write about that stuff. I've been immersed in Conan since I was a little guy. So it's a pleasure to read those, you know, to read the originals and to feel that it's a certain amount of inspiration from that. And I tried to channel that into Lotus and its sequel.
So I'm going to harken back to a topic that Matt touched on just a little bit. And it's a question for both of you. Aside from Conan, since we're talking about him and there's so much excitement, what other characters are you excited about, you know, exploring?
Can we, I don't know if this directed at Chris or myself, but
Both, either one.
I'm really impressed at the array of authors that they have writing this forthcoming pastiche, the e-books and the Heroic Legend series. There's some really striking stuff in there. I mean, did anybody notice we have Jonathan Mabry writing a Solomon Kane story?
Yeah.
Jonathan Mabry is like the current editor of Weird Tales.
Yeah.
So we got the current editor of Weird Tales writing, you know, isn't Solomon Kane like arguably the first sword and sorcery hero of all, Red Shadows, 1928, in Weird Tales? That's kind of cool.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I think he's on record too for being a very big fan of that character.
Yeah, it just seems really kind of symmetrical to me that the guy doing Weird Tales now would do a Solomon Kane story. And I'm really psyched to see what he does with it. You know, that could be potentially really powerful. I think it was Red Shadows is the first Solomon Kane story in 1928, mm-hmm. Argued by some to be the first sword and sorcery story of all. Others saying it was 1929 with the King Cole story, The Shadow Kingdom. Mm-hmm. Take your pick, but I'll go with Red Shadows, and I'm psyched to see what Mabry does with that. That'll be cool.
It's great. I can't say anything, but it's great.
Well, now we had the opportunity I've read John's Conan novel as well as some of his other work. But I also, we got our hands on, oh my God, I got to make sure I don't butcher names here. Stephen Graham Jones's Lord of the Mount, which is coming out. Oh my God. Pretty soon, right?
Next week.
Really?
Next week, right on.
Fantastic. So, yeah, I mean, we all had a read of that, and there's a few things that struck me about it. Like, I read his The Only Good Indians. Mm-hmm. I always mess that title up, too. You know, a horror book, essentially, and I loved it. And then it was almost like serendipitous that shortly thereafter I found out he was doing a Conan tale and that he was a big Conan fan. I read his article. He had, I can't remember which, a Texas newspaper.
Texas Monthly. I was just rereading it today.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Great. And I mean, that's like you were saying, you can tell there's the adoration there. Someone had a story with it. And what struck me about his story is that it's very much in his voice. It is absolutely that author doing his thing with Conan, as opposed to necessarily trying to sound like Howard. And I think we have two different fan bases for that, right? Like, some people are going to want that. Me, I'll totally read that, but I'm also very much open to having authors use their own voice in the Hyborian age. And John, what I was going to say about your book too, is that yes, it's clear you loved Conan. You know, it's not a book that's like breaking the mold for plotting or things like that. I mean, how do you even do that anymore? But it was clear you understood Conan in a way that I think everyone else does too. I know that's strange because we're always going to interpret the characters differently in our own way, but there's certain consistencies, right? And when you read some of those old pastiche and they just feel way off base, yours did not. And same with Stephen Graham Jones's story. It felt like Conan. The voice is different. Maybe it doesn't really plot necessarily the same as his others. It has its own feel, but it friggin' works. And so I'm really excited to see what these other authors do with these keys to the kingdom.
I'm not at all surprised that Jones would get it right. I mean, he's, you know, not only is he like one of the more celebrated authors of sort of supernatural horror these days, But did you read the essay he wrote about his youth reading Conan? It was in Texas Monthly.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's been quoted on. Yeah, that is a heartfelt little essay right there.
Exactly.
And you can tell his he felt a real connection with Robert E. Howard and with his creations. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that translated into the story. I can't wait to read Lord of the Mouth, which I can see is coming out on the 26th. So, yeah, right now, a week from today.
I bet you Chris Henry Cavill over there. I bet you he could get you a copy of that, an advanced copy, since you too are someone who's going to have new material or material come out in this collection.
This is true. Black Starlight's on October 17th. And that'll be the first time you can read that pastiche that was when it wasn't serialized and back at 12 separate issues of a Marvel comic. So that's cool. I'm pleased to see that.
Which one was that? Was it Savage Sword for you?
No, that was, I think Odin was in, Scott Odin.
Yeah, you were in The Barbarian.
I was in straight up Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, yeah, I did. I read several of those issues and said bits of your story too. So I'm excited to have it all in one package, absolutely. Okay, guys, I want to make sure I don't miss. Another question. Chris, maybe you know this, maybe you don't, but Blood of the Serpent does serve as that direct prequel to Red Nails, to a point where like it leaves off right as Red Nails begins. And when we reviewed that book many episodes back, I thought that the chapter that leads into that was like the best in the book.
It was, yes.
You can tell he just wrote the shit out of that chapter, and it was.
You can see his excitement in it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, you know, have you noticed any other tales doing something similar? Like, do they end up bookending existing tales? You don't have to tell us which, you don't have to spoil, but is that something some of the other authors chose to do?
I can say that, because you've already mentioned it, Shadow of Vengeance by Scott Odin is an intended follow-up to The Devil in Iron.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, I don't know how much I can say. It doesn't seem to be something that a lot of the writers are homing in on necessarily. They're mm-hmm. kind of writing their own tales, kind of like standing up on their own lauds, if you will. Doesn't seem that way. Okay. I would like to see more of that, but I also like when a writer they've got a story burning in their heart and they just want to get it out. Mm-hmm. And anything that's going to be written with that passion, with that confidence, I am all about.
Yeah, good. I think that whenever I'm doing stuff for the role-playing game, the board game, I want to situate it in a time in Conan's career. And again, I know our chronology is kind of spotty, but I almost want to position it between two stories. Doesn't need to lead into either one. I just want to kind of have to ground it in a sense of where it is. So
it also gives you a sense of who Conan is as a character at that time, because I always sort of see him in three different phases in his life. He's the young Conan when he's in Tower of the Elephant, then you go sort of middle age, and then you have King Conan, right? Mm-hmm. And by knowing where you want to sort of slot in whatever chronology you want to follow, that helps you have more of an idea of the attitude he has in the time, like what's driving him, what's behind him, what sort of experiences he's already lived through, and how that informs what he's doing on the page now. Mm-hmm. I think it's always good to have that in the back of your mind, but really don't see very many writers as of now really honing in to try to like piece them together.
Mm-hmm. Has anybody tried, or is anybody investigating the, when I say young Conan, I mean like Conan of Sumeria in the village, you know, prior to leaving and fighting in Venerium, and even after he's a king, you know, in his old age. Is anybody exploring those parts of Conan's life?
I've seen a pitch or two that circle around Conan when he's a kid, and there have been talks about beyond King Conan as well, but nothing that is concrete just yet. But I would love to explore that. I mean, one of the characters, when we're talking about other characters of Robert E. Howard that I'm excited to explore, is Cull. Cull has such a rich history that's just kind of talked about.
Yeah.
You know, when he's a kid and like leading up to Volusia, I would love to see a story that has young Cull as he's growing up. I mean, that'd be fantastic. I would love to see that.
Yeah. Even like before his exile from Atlantis, right? Yeah. Yeah. That'd be rad. I will pitch you a self-help book called Taking the Bull by the Horns, 15 Winters in Samaria. What do you think of that one?
It's great. I'm in. Send it over to my office.
All right. It'll be there. It'll be on your desk tomorrow. Okay. Sorry. Cheesy joke, Matt. Here he goes.
Anything for a laugh.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Not anything, Dean. I have integrity. Well. Come on. But I will try to elicit humor. Yes. So I feel like we kind of answered this question, but it was one like, Chris, when you're getting a new batch of authors in, are you going to give them some guidelines or tenets, perhaps for these stories? Like, don't do this, but have the freedom to do this kind of thing. Do you have anything in mind for that?
No, I mean, I'm coming from a background as a writer as well. And the last thing I want to do is sort of put a writer in a box. You know, that's the quickest way to sort of stymie their creative flow, unless we have a very specific story we want them, we're hiring them to write, like we need something to slot here, et cetera, et cetera. Then I want to give a writer free rein to do what they want, because again, I want that passion on the page. I want to see what about the story like really appealed to them. And then once I start getting a draft in and I'll see like, oh, you know, this doesn't quite work with the character, then I'll come in and we'll sort of needle things around. But I want to see a writer running with in their element, you know. I want to see that passion. I want to see that story is screaming to get out of them. You know, that's where you're going to get the best work. Again, going back to that confidence I was talking about with Howard. I mean, I want to see that confidence on the page because readers can see when you're kind of phoning it in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Readers can tell when something is off and they're not feeling what they're putting down. So I want the confidence. I want that story. Like John was saying, he wanted to write something for him. If you're writing for yourself and you're happy with what you see, the readers will come 100%.
Yeah. And if you don't, I mean, if it's just hewing to canon and things like that, it's not necessarily going to work on its own merits and it kind of needs to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Awesome. Let me see what I got here. Aha. So John, this is a question for you. You're no stranger to writing Conan. In fact, Emerald Lotus still seems to get top praise for among the pastiche. I know Living Plague is coming next year from Titan, and then it is a sequel, like a direct sequel to Emerald. Sorry.
Living Plague is a direct sequel to Emerald Lotus.
Yes.
Back when I was thinking about writing a Conan, I tried to figure out where I would put it in his career. He comes back up to the Black Kingdoms after the death of Belit and Queen of the Black Coast. And he becomes a mercenary in Shem for about a year, give or take. That's what the outlines all seem to agree on. And nobody really written any stories about that. So I figured, okay, that year is mine. And so I did Emerald Lotus, and like the next, I planned out a handful of novels that was going to take him through his sort of mercenary career there. And so Emerald Lotus was supposed to introduce him to that. Immediately following up with that is the events that take place in Conan the Living Plague in my little pastiche Conan world. And Black Starlight actually takes place between the two of them. It's kind of a bridge between one and the other. It stands alone, but they're sort of all of a piece as they follow Conan, you know, chronologically through that period in his life that hadn't been written about before I stuck a pen in there.
Okay, you actually answered the second part of that question for me. So I guess what I was saying is, yeah, are you keeping some internal continuity with your own Conan stories?
And absolutely. I figured as long as I was going to, you know, work up a part of his life, I could, you know, I could tie various bits of it together. I can reference the, you know, the stories that I appreciated that other people had done, touch on the Howard stories wherever I could, and try to take Conan and a handful of people he knew or worked with or was enemies with through a handful of stories together. And that's what I was embarking on when I did Emerald Lotus. And, you know, we'll get a little farther once Living Plague's released.
Yeah, that's awesome because I cannot remember the characters' names, but I do remember liking sort of Conan's almost his right hand man, the other warrior fella, and then the female lead. They both kind of struck me as more than just disposable pulp characters.
Thanks.
And so I'm excited to hear that we'll hear more from them. That's awesome.
Yeah. Most of the characters you encounter, a number of those that survived the course of the book, you'll encounter again in the follow-up. Indeed, the Black Starlight, the Heroic Legends ebook, is basically what happens to Conan and the Sorceress Zalandra and her servant Nisa and lover slash main man Heng Shi on the way home from their adventures in Conan and the Emerald Lotus. They come back through Stygia and cross the Styx and have a hard time on the way. That's that story.
I am really going to have to find my Emerald Lotus copy. I know I have it somewhere. I have to reread it.
You can reread it in June when you can read both in one volume.
Yeah, there you go.
It's an omnibus, right? What is it? A duology? Yeah. An omnibus?
Duology.
Collectively called Conan in the City of the Dead. Yes. Brought to us by, actually, that's Steve Saffel, I think, who provided that, which is a good solid name for it.
Yeah, and it kind of echoes Hall of the Dead, right? Which is one of those unfinished tales.
Yeah, that's right? A good one too.
It's the one where DeCamp rode in a giant slug that he had to kill with a brick.
I remember that one. It's a good one.
Yeah, well, listen, man, those stories, like, you know, for all the crap that DeCamp gets, and that's a whole other dynamic to discuss, there was fun to be had in those books, and a lot of people kind of cut their teeth on them. So I don't dismiss them outright. I just, you know, with new stuff, I'm like, all right, we've already done that. We don't need to adhere to the older pastiche. We can kind of just do new stuff. Like, that's what I do with the board game and the role-playing game too, is that I'm not going to talk about the slug in Hall of the Dead necessarily, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. This is a question where I'm going to actually ask all of us this question. I think we can all sort of weigh in. Chris, you may already have, I don't know, but you can kind of, you can clarify or change it up if you want. So I would like to know, so first of all, this heroic series is something I was kind of hoping for a long time. Not necessarily novels by all kinds of modern authors, because novels, that's a huge deal and years of work and, you know, promotion, et cetera, et cetera. So this sort of rapid fire digital release of short tales is something I very much have wanted to see, you know, coming from various authors. And so I think to myself, which characters would I like to see explored more in depth? So I would say that the question I'm asking, which character are each of you most excited to see explored, whether they've already been announced or not, that is not Conan? So could be someone from Conan's world. It could be someone from the Hyborian age, but what character do you want to see stories about that we haven't yet gotten? Or maybe it's one that's already listed and you can tell us why you want to hear more about that. Let's start with Dean, because it's been a while.
Oh, gosh.
I just dropped it on you, didn't I?
Well, we kind of did touch a little bit about this. Solomon Kane also is one of my favorite Howard characters. And while it might sound a little weird, I would like to see a real take on Howard's version of Red Sonja, not the comic book version of Red Sonja.
Sonja with a Y.
Right. Yeah. So I would have to say most likely that. I would like to see someone really try to dig into or lean into Red Sonja as Howard envisioned her.
And that is not on the list currently, correct?
It's not, no. Not yet.
Not yet.
I'm taking notes, guys. I'm taking notes.
So if only he had a pen right now. Yeah, that would be my big first choice. Yeah.
Well, and something about that too is nice, because it, you know, the other Sonja with the J, is there's just so much bloody pop cultural confusion about that.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you square, oh, she's a character by Robert E. Howard. Like, yeah, kind of. But so I feel like a tale about that to help edify the audience about what that's a, you know, or the pop cultural audience, maybe that would help. I don't know.
Yeah. And wasn't there a very obscure character that Howard wrote about, some pirate woman, and I'm forgetting her name right now. Real obscure character that he wrote. I think it was during one of our podcasts, one of our guests had mentioned it, and I went digging deep on the internet, found it, and it's like maybe a 15-20 minute read, but it's pretty darn good. And now I'm gonna have to go looking for it now that I've mentioned it.
Deep cuts.
Yes, yes.
All right, let's move on to Chris. You're on the hook now.
It's tough. I mean, this isn't just me saying it because I work at Heroic, but we have such a vast stable of Howard characters that, and they span so many different genres that I feel like sort of a disservice not to explore those. That's why doing these short fictions is a great way to see sort of the appetite of what people want to read more of. Mm-hmm. I don't even know this, beyond for the Del Rey books that are all the collecting Howard works. After Conan, the one that sells the most is El Barak, which is interesting. Which is fantastic. So we have all these different genres. El Barak, right? He's the gunfighter in the Far East. You got Bran MacMorn, who's the last Celt versus these Eldritch horrors, right? You got Belit, you got Cole, you got Sailor Steve Costigan, you know, all these great characters. Me personally, I want to see Cull, but a slightly, not really obscure, but in, I believe it's the Howard story, The Dark Man, Black Turloch.
Yeah.
I would love to see a little bit more of him. He's great. I would love to see some more from him.
Awesome. I'll read whatever is made available, but yeah, that's exciting.
It just, that slots so perfectly. And like, I love just like the old Norse stuff. I love the Irish, that Celtic stuff. I love anything historical fiction, you know, stick that right in my veins. I'm all about it.
Good. Scott Odin would appreciate that, I think.
Yeah. I found the elusive pirate mistress. Her name is Helen Tavrell. And he wrote one story called Isle of the Pirate's Doom, written in 28. Certain quotes from it, from the book. You can read it online. Actually, it's on Wikipedia. One of her cool sayings is, "I am probably the finest pistol shot in the world," said the girl modestly, "but the blade is my darling."
That's wonderful. I believe I believe that story was Conanized by Roy Thomas in an issue of Savage Sword of Conan.
That tracks. He did that. Those were things that he did.
Yeah. If you look up the Isle of Pirate's Doom on Wikisource, it is written by Robert E. Howard. There's the first day, the second day, and the third day, and it is a full blown story.
Check that out.
What a title. I wish I had the balls to name something that. Isle of Pirate's Doom. Yeah,
that's the glory of the pulp era, man.
Exactly.
Those titles could burn you.
Yeah, maybe we'll see Helen Tavrell. It's T-A-V-R-E-L, Tavrell.
Okay, dig it. Mr. Hawking, same question. Which character? Which one are you most excited to see?
I might ramble, guys.
That's fine, do it.
I was really pleased to see that there was a Bran MacMorn pastiche in the works from Stephen Shrewsbury. That strikes me as a character that wouldn't be easy to handle. There's this you know, melancholy, even tragic strain to his stuff that needs to be there. Mm-hmm. But there's a character. I mean, how much Bran MacMorn pastiche has there been? There's like the Carl Edward Wagner novel, Legion from the Shadows. There's what Tierney and Smith wrote one. I think it was a single printing from Zebra. Yeah, For the Witch of the Mist.
Yeah.
Right?
That was fun.
But other than that, is there any other Bran MacMorn pastiche? No, so I'm psyched to read that, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't mind reading more.
I'm with you.
I saw
that
also that there
record.
Excuse me?
Sorry, I said I'm with you with that on the record, because like, Worms of the Earth is my favorite Robert E. Howard story, period. And
really?
Understood. Yeah, okay. I'm super.
It's pretty damn good. I think so too. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't help but think of what happens after that story. There's such fertile ground for where Bran would go immediately after that, or what would happen to him, or what his state would be, state of mind, state of the Picts. Do they trust him anymore? Like, he's invoked dark spirits. I don't know. That to me is awesome. And sadly, I picked up Legion from the Shadows and I got 100 pages and I bounced off because it just felt like there was not enough forward momentum in a sword and sorcery novel. Doesn't mean I don't think it was good. It means I did not have the appetite for it. But for A Witch of the Mists, I thought was a hell of a good time. So that one I did like. And sorry, I interrupted you. After Bran McMorran, what else would...
Well, I mean, I could go on for some time. I was pleased to see that Laird Barron will come across with a guy. I mean, probably one of the most highly regarded, if not the most highly regarded, modern author of supernatural horror, the variety that might have appeared in Weird Tales back in the day. But his stuff, he's doing a Conan, but his stuff veers, I don't know if you've read much of his work, but it veers into the surreal, into the abstract, and that guy, I bet, would write a kick-ass cull, because that's more in the fabric of cull stories. So I almost wish he'd done a cull instead of a Conan, but I'll be delighted to read his Conan. Oddly enough, I get a kick out of Howard's occult investigator heroes. You guys remember Conrad and Kirwan?
Oh yeah.
I get a kick out of those, and nobody's done much with those. And when, you know, I guess there's been some bits and pieces out there, but again, if we could get John Langan to write a Conrad and Kirwan story, I bet you it would be awesome. But you know, John Langan may be my favorite modern writer of horror. Author of The Fisherman and a handful of really kicking.
I just read The Fisherman. It's fantastic.
I have to agree. It's one of the best horror novels, certainly one of the best weird supernatural horror novels I've read in many a year. If you haven't, you should check out his shorter works. He's got plenty of them in there. A lot of them are just about as good as that novel.
It's such a fascinating book because it really eschews typical structure of a book. It's basically bookended in a lot of, I don't want to ruin it for anybody who wants to read it, but it is just really, really out there. It's fantastic. I would highly recommend.
Super absorbing. And it has a really wonderfully strange supernatural evil, really, really classic stuff. Lovecraft and his tribe would have eaten it up. Great stuff.
Yeah. Hmm. Oh yeah.
That's awesome because I feel like there's, this is going to end up, I'm going to segue out of this before I'm forced to answer my own question. But maybe I'll circle back. Maybe I won't, but it feels to me that with this format of release, you know, starting with eBooks, having it be short story style, it feels to me like you can take a little more risk than you could with traditional publishing. And I don't mean risk as a negative. I mean like these ideas you're throwing out there right now, John, like those all seem doable to seek out a writer and say, hey man, if you like this stuff, we can contract you to do this story. It's 10K, whatever it is for words. It's not you having to sign them up for a novel. So to me, it kind of opens the doors of opportunity a little more where we can just get this, like we can literally dream about this and potentially get it done, which is exciting.
That sounds wonderful, doesn't it?
It's really a lot, because then you can also go for me personally, there is a handful of authors that I would love to see take a shot at a short story, and it's far easier to get them on board with a short story than, say, writing a novel. Mm-hmm. This isn't anything in the works at all, but I've heard that George R. R. Martin is a huge Solomon Kane fan. I would love to get in touch in his camp, see if he would do that. I doubt that would happen. He's kind of busy. He's working on some stuff.
Oh, he's not working on anything anymore.
I would love to see that. I mean, some of my favorite, if I can get Joe Abercrombie to write a Conan story, that'd be incredible. Mm. Again, this is really pie in the sky, but it's far easier to get someone on board to do something with small commitment like that and just sort of, again, give them the reins to just do what they want, have fun with it.
Yeah, because I think like you know, as a writer myself, very modest tier of it, that's an exciting prospect, right? To just go play in a sandbox for a bit while you're doing other assignments, right?
Well, yeah, Chris, I think that you might actually, should you get Abercrombie to write a Conan story, you might actually get my wife to read a Conan story because she really likes Abercrombie and what he does, you know, already. Oh, yeah.
Who doesn't?
Wow.
And fantastic. I mean, and any of these authors which have these huge audiences now,
exactly.
The high-end fantasy authors, would really call attention to the Conan stuff, which still at this stage of the game reaches a sort of almost a prescribed audience, mm-hmm, you know, and mm-hmm. that would could bust yes. it out to the next level. It's kind of unfortunate it works that way, but you know, these authors have some pretty high powered sizable audiences. And if they dip their toe in, you know, in the Robert E. Howard world, it would be noticed.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. And I mean, that's something we talk about a lot in our, you know, sword and sorcery circuit, right? Is that sword and sorcery, most of us feel, is a genre most people will like if they understand, you know, what it is or that it even exists, right? Because we've talked about this. It's kind of a weasel word for, like, what does sword and sorcery even mean? Is it Harry Potter? Is it blah, blah, blah. But something like that, where you get those authors shining a little light on, you know, this thing that we all dig, it will help bring the people. Now, Joe Abercrombie, I mean, obviously he's probably my favorite writer of modern fantasy. Which character would you want to put him on?
Oh, that's tough. He can kind of run the gamut there, right?
He could probably do Red Sonja, actually.
Ooh. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm kind of in love with that idea.
I'll see what I can do, guys.
Oh my gosh, the way he notes. Yeah, especially yeah. the way he characterizes some of his female
yeah,
the protagonists, like, and stuff like that.
Monza or even like you think of Dark Agnes and you think of Monza from
right.
Best Served Cold, right?
Right
on.
Yeah, that would be excellent. I think if Joe Abercrombie was at any way, shape, or form interested, I'd be like, here's a stable of characters. Pick one.
Yes.
I don't care. I'm a turn away. You pick one. Yeah.
But put an asterisk by Red Sonja.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be rad.
Okay. I mean, what is great about the Howard characters is that so many, Conan is so well known, but Howard is so well respected that there's always someone who wants to dip their toe in that world.
Yeah.
And that is a real pleasure being on this end, being able to sort of offer that opportunity and be a steward for all the Howard work. So I'm really excited. I've worked a lot of jobs in Hollywood, you know, and I haven't really enjoyed myself, but working at Heroic Signatures, all the people here are so passionate about what we do and what we are stewards of that I wake up in the morning, I'm really jazzed to go to work. First thing I do is I open up my email, see, oh, did we get any new cool art in? I want to check it out. So it's a lot of fun. And I feel I have a lot of pleasure and just happiness working in this job. And it's so, and people like yourselves, you have this podcast dedicated, named after Rogues in the House, the Howard property. It screams out just how passionate this fan base is. And I'm very lucky to be a part of all this happening around it.
Well, man. Yeah, and they're a good team of people to work with too. Like they're pretty easygoing. They understand the stuff, and the fact that all of that art gets owned by them is so sweet. When you like have to do a board game or something, you're like, ooh,
oh, it's fantastic. Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. What do I want? Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're getting close to our 1 hour mark, and we're trying to keep Rogues in the House to more of a 1 hour time slot, you guys. So we're gonna start finishing it up. I would just say for my own, to answer that question I posed to everyone else, because of course I want to talk about what I want. Yeah, more Bran McMoran, I would agree. And also I'd like to see more, look, I will read whatever, and I'm not just stuck on Conan. And I also agree that, like, oh my God, let's explore Cull, because Cull is so freaking cool. You know, he's more of the thinking man barbarian. He's less of
yes.
He's more of a prog band compared to Conan's rock and roll Rolling Stones attitude. You know what I mean?
Her metaphor. Oh, yeah. Wonderful metaphor.
Yeah, that that stacks up with the one I think we had Howard on, and I mentioned I was quite proud of this at the time, that Star Trek are the Beatles of is the Beatles of science fiction or something like that.
Anyways, oh yes, yes.
Okay,
we can unpack that a bit later. Okay, Star Wars would be the Stones, I guess. I don't know, but although neither one of those are particularly sexy, and the Stones are. So, all right, let's move past that. So Bran McMorran, but I'd like to see some of those secondary Conan characters, like, you know, Valeria always gets my attention because she's just, we don't get much from her, but she's just clearly a badass. She lives mm-hmm. among men who are probably all trying to cozy up to her, as it were. So she's fighting off of that. She's fighting off that angle, but also being a total badass and leader of men herself. We get the sense. So I'd like to see more of that, but even like a Bale Pitour, like an or like a story about maybe even not about him, but about like he's a strangler of Yota Pong. What the hell is that? Let's look into that. That's a crazy Howard's world building was it felt so effortless, and just these little asides could open up an entire world.
I think Balthus deserves at least a little backstory.
Yeah, sure, he could, yeah. or even. Thak has a race of man apes in these mountains. What the hell's going on there? And what happens if someone goes there or that tribe of apes decides, screw this, let's go raiding. Like, let's go crack some skulls with rocks. Let's evolve. And like that kind of stuff could be very cool.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I can see Chris's mind just turning right now.
Well, he was literally taking notes throughout this, so that's good to see.
All the possibilities. This is great. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fun. All right, dudes. So we're getting close to the end. Honestly, I just want to say that this was honestly a fascinating conversation. I could probably go on for this for a while. And we will probably invite you guys both back at different times. Before we wrap, I want to really encourage listeners of the show, fans of Conan, support this initiative, support this this attempt at getting you a bunch of rapid fire Howard pastiche, because this is a small piece of your monthly income, I would imagine. It's not a huge investment. And if we buy into this, obviously it opens up opportunities for later. I don't want to regurgitate to everyone sort of the rules with comic books and series, but if you don't support the thing when it comes out in a serial fashion, you will not get the collection, because it just, how are you going to support a collection if you've not appropriately sold it in a serial way? So I would just say, drop it a couple of shekels and let's see what comes, because it is an exciting rollout of amazing mm-hmm. authors and characters.
It's pretty much unprecedented, I think, even back in the golden era of Sword and Sorcery back in the 70s. You didn't see anything quite like this.
Agreed. It is truly what I, as a Conan fan, as a Howard fan, have wanted to see for, like, you know, over a decade. Other authors come in, short story format, as befits Conan and Howard's legacy. Let's go.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I'm really excited for all this. And I am one of those people who vastly prefers print over digital. So I would love to see all these stories collected in a nice collection. But please, if you love Conan, you love Robert Howard, come check out our stories, especially if you want to see some of the non-Conan characters. If you want to see more Bran McMorran, if you want to see more Belit, more El Barak, jump on those stories. They're all excellent. I can attest that, not just because I'm here on behalf of my company, but I'm just a big reader. I love it. Love a good action story. These are all fantastic.
So incredibly exciting. That's awesome.
Yeah,
it is. Okay. Before we go though, I want you guys all a chance to hawk wares if you have them, even if it's just a, hey, this is a thing I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. Dean, what you got? Anything? Buy a new sword?
No, but I bought another piece of armor.
totally counts.
What piece?
Brigandine coat of plates.
Oh, nice.
Awesome.
On this show, we understand exactly what that is.
Where do you purchase such a thing these days? Did you have someone manufacture it for you?
Sometimes it's a little hard to find somebody that's trustworthy. I used to do a lot of historical reenacting. So really what I'm doing is I'm kind of reaching out to some of these people who do it on kind of a side gig more so than big manufacturers. Although you can find some good stuff in, in the bigger production companies and stuff.
So are you pleased with what you got?
I am. I always try to go for as what I would like to call as historically accurate as possible, but sometimes that's almost impossible to do. But between you, me, and the wall, nobody is going to notice it when I'm walking in a medieval fair or at a school demo or something like that. They just think it's cool.
You wear that brigandine coat to Gen Con next year, and I will attempt to stab you.
Okay.
We'll see how it goes. Just kidding, America. I'm not coming from Canada to scrub the convention. We are not violent, and if I did anything to offend you, I apologize.
You didn't offend me, and I'm wearing the brigandine and getting stabbed.
That's Canadian steel coming at you, boy.
Yeah, it's only one third as strong as the American steel.
Probably true. Chris, I mean, we know your role here. You're the editor. I mean, if there's anything else you want us to check out or just tell us to be excited, that's cool.
Be excited. We also have a new Conan website launching October 5th. If you've seen our Heroic Signature website, it's done by the same people. They're fantastic what they do. It looks super cool. A lot of hard work went into it. And there's also a surprise little game that's on it. And if you play the game, you can win actual physical prizes sent to you. So that's fun. Otherwise, check out our short fictions. They start rolling out in a week. That's Stephen Graham Jones, Lord of the Mounts. And Mr. John C. Hawking, his comes out in October, Black Starlight.
So exciting. Mr. Hawking, hawk some wares.
Here it comes. Stand by. Hold on to your chair. Yeah, as just said, Black Starlight, my Conan story, October 17th, the Heroic Legends ebook. Weird Books got a story of mine. It's supposed to show up in their yearbook. Who knows when that's going to appear? They've had it for a little while. Tales from the Magician's Skull. I haven't had a story in there since issue 7, but issue 12, which should be coming out sometime in the next month or two, has a story by me in it. And I wrote them another one that I don't know if they're going to feature or not, but it's a big blockbuster full of really grotesque horror. So I hope they do. Sweet. And then after that, hey, Conan in the City of the Dead, my omnibus of Emerald Lotus and Living Plague in June 2024. Every day I'm at home working, writing a novel. Whether anything comes to that, we'll see. Wish me luck.
Well, you're a fine writer, sir. I look forward to your output. I always do.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Oh, listen, you got it. And, get out there and actually, buy the Magician's Skull, review the Magician's Skull. It is the most beautiful sword and sorcery magazine perhaps ever.
It is sort of unprecedented. I mean,
it is
bigger, glossier, nicer looking, nicer feeling than any other genre magazine available right now. And it's devoted exclusively to sword and sorcery, which is anomalous and wonderful.
Exactly. And Weird Book too. Hopefully that gets coming out again too. Sorry, Chris, what were you going to say there?
I was going to say, Mr. Hawking, where might these fine listeners find the Magician's Skull to purchase?
You can find them on Amazon, and you can get them directly from Goodman Games. I think the connection that Goodman Games, that publishes the Skull, has to the RPG world, the whole role-playing world, is strong, if not stronger, than their connection to anybody else, like the normal normal readers of genre fiction. So go into the Goodman Games site or any of the sites that that deal with their dungeon crawl classics. You can get it there. There's a handful of comic book stores that carry gaming that might have the Skull on the shelf as well.
Yeah. And it's one of those things too. You kind of want to snap it up when it's there too, because it's not like a print on demand magazine. It's like it goes through printing waves and then that's that. Yeah, exactly. And it is so cool to have those gaming stats in there. Like, it was a true honor to be published in the Skull, and I often just pick it up and leaf through it and just admire the layouts and the pages and the paper and all these things. So yeah, get out there. Yeah. Get out there and buy that and review it. And Weird Book too. Oh, and me, what's going on with me? Conan RPG stuff. I just thought today, you know what I want to put in there? No, I can't. I can't reveal it. But I was talking to my, I was talking to my buddy in France about like art, right? Because we own a lot of art from Heroic Signatures, and you know, we can reuse stuff and stuff that we commissioned for the Monolith game. Like, we have loads of things for every encounter, every feasible thing. We've got art, and so I was actually like, "Holy crap! What don't we have? What should we commission?" and I had one idea for a scene. And then my guy in France sent me a picture from Predator with the, you know, the bicep shot, right? With the, you know, the Dylan. And I kind of want to, so instead of adapting something specific from Howard, I was like, I'm serious when I say this. I would like to lampoon or no, let's say a homage to that shot with some barbarian biceps, maybe with a little armlet on there or something. Uh-huh. Just a shout out, a wink to the other things and the fun and the so will that happen? I don't know, but if you a year or more than a year from now leaf through the new Conan RPG booklet and you see an image that is throwing out to Predator, you'll know it was me and you heard it here first. Beyond that,
if you need some extra muscle in the Heroic Signatures halls, I got you.
That's right. I will be sending you. I will be sending you information. You're going to have to send the pictures over here. All right, we're about to wrap. I would just another magazine I admire a great deal is Old Moon Quarterly. If you have not looked into or picked up Old Moon Quarterly, they really sort of lean into the dark horror medieval aspects of sword and sorcery. Check them out. I just made, I can officially say I have sold a story to their next issue. I think it's for their next issue. I'm immensely proud of that. And so that's my thing. Check out the forthcoming issue of Old Moon Quarterly. Support your local sword and sorcery. Thank you.
Yeah.
It was,
that's a striking publication. It's pretty unique, and they treat their writers well.
They do.
They're going places.
It's a pro rate magazine, and it's they have very specific tastes in what I think they want, and that's kind of rad because you're going to get a particular thing from a magazine. Anyways, we got to wrap it. Dean's got to go. He's got things to do. He's got people to drive around and wood to chop. Guys,
yes,
Chris,
right.
Thank you so much for joining. John, it's been too long. We should have had you on earlier. Thank you for coming by. We will call you guys back in maybe a year's time for when we're launching wave two of these bad boys.
Thank you very, very much for having us on. We really appreciate it, giving us a chance to hawk our wares and talk Howard.
It's been a true pleasure,
man.
We shall do it again.
It's great to actually hang around with some people that, you know what you're talking about when you talk about these things. So, thank you.
Too true.
Why do you think we do it? We can't talk to anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
It's like me and my fiance with D&D.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, guys. These rogues are out. And if you do not may your swords always remain sharp, and if you do not listen, eat a Christmas turkey. Goodbye.